Hello, hello. Welcome to Aligned and Unapologetic, a podcast where we showcase stories of women claiming their identity, stepping into their power, and living their life as their full-ass self unapologetically. My name is Antoinette, your host and your coach unapologetic. Join me as we dive into the riveting, inspiring stories of my guests to empower you to start your unapologetic journey. Let's get started. Hello, my amazing, unapologetic people of the globe. Welcome to today's episode. We have a special guest. I mean, all of our guests here in this show are special. And today, our guest is a jazz singer and a voice artist, Amy Sinha. She graciously shared with us her unapologetic story. In her childhood, she had challenges, and there was even a point where she almost went blind. But because of the support of her family and her own will and strength and unapologetic self, she was able to go through these challenges in her childhood and found music and jazz. She talks about finding the power in your voice and living your life authentically, no matter who you are and what that looks like or sound like to you. And so here we have Amy Sinha. Hello, everyone. Thanks again for being on this episode with me. And today I'm very excited for this episode. We have a jazz singer. At least that's what I saw in the website. And I can't wait to hear more about that. I will be giving you more details about her, our guest for today, but let's not make her wait and bring her on. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. How are you today?
Doing good. Super excited. I just did a yoga
session. Oh, wow.
I'm in my yogic high right now.
Very calm then. Very calm and relaxed.
Yes. And a little bit like on a high too. So apologies if I sound like crazy a little bit. So I wanted to ask you a lot of things. So first of all, my dear listeners, her website is going to be in the show description below. And it's very interesting. It's very intuitive. Once the first time that I clicked on it, like Amy is really taking you down her story and like what she's all about. And it's really interesting how you have your website built. So let's hear it. For the purpose of my listeners, I would love to ask you, where are you from? What are your identities that you claim? What are your pronouns?
Okay. I haven't really been asked that before, I have to be honest. But I live in the UK, in Wales. I was born in Wales, but I'm Indian. My parents are from India and they came here in the 70s. But I am a female, born female. I don't know what you call that. Was that cisgender, right? Yeah.
Amazing. Awesome. Do you have... kids, husband, do you have family?
No. I've got my parents and two sisters, two older sisters. So I have two nephews right now, but no kids of my own.
Oh, amazing. I love that. Okay. And what do you do? I know that you're a jazz singer because I read that in your about page, but I would love to hear the story from you, from being a jazz singer to what you're a voice artist, right? Right now?
Yes. Yes, right now. Okay. Yeah. So I started singing when I was very young. I loved all different types of music, but somehow I just got into jazz. I think I was going through a difficult time. I suffered from a lot of disabilities when I was younger. I had cataract about 1 year old, so I was almost blind when they took it out. So I've been having to wear big, thick glasses tied with string because it used to come off when I was really young. And then I got diagnosed when I was 4 years old with a rare disorder. Is called sensory neuropathy type 2, which means that I can't feel pain or hot or cold. So I kept on burning myself. And that also meant that my spine was affected. And I also suffered from osteoarthritis when I was 9. And I stopped growing at the age of 11. So all of it kind of, I don't know, maybe I think my head was just was going through so many different things. But music-wise, I related to jazz because of the whole complex nature of what it is. And I just absolutely loved it. So then I went on to study in music college and I graduated with a jazz degree. And then I've been singing like in bands and weddings and performances all over the country. I actually sung in Luxembourg. I appeared on radio, which is really cool. Yeah, I haven't been to America or unfortunately, but I've been interviewed a lot around the world, which has been really cool. And then I put out music of my own. I wrote my own album. Oh, I actually did collaborate with a New York album, New York record label, and we put out a single together, which a jazz single, which did really well. And then I kind of moved over to country rock. I kind of got into Nashville, the TV show, when I got inspired. I was like, I have to do this. So I put out a couple of singles. And then I know, my journey is a bit random, really. But I decided a couple of years later, I didn't want to do it anymore. So in 2019, I kind of moved over to voiceover. And I've been doing that, which was good because the pandemic hit. So obviously, I couldn't perform anyway. So I set up a little studio at home and I can work from home over the internet. So that's what I've been doing. And now I'm a voiceover artist.
I love all of that. I love that you, at the very earlier age, you had all of these challenges, but quickly you were able to find your where you're good at and your talent like right away. And I'm not hearing from your story. I'm not hearing from your voice or like when I read that in your about page, I'm not hearing that any of that like hold you, like held you back. And any of that did not become a blockage for you to do anything that you love.
Yeah. I think, I had a very supportive family, very lucky. They did support me. Anything I wanted to do, they kind of helped make it happen. So even though in my head, I was like, oh gosh, how is this going to happen? I think I got a sense of anything is possible and you can make anything happen. It just takes the right support. It might be a little bit more difficult than for somebody that doesn't have many disabilities, but it can happen. So I think that's how I kind of see things now, that anything is always possible, whatever you want to make happen.
Yes, I caught your motto in your website and you said here that the impossible is always possible. All it takes is a little imagination, belief in yourself, patience, and determination. Also, never stop applauding yourself because fairies really do exist.
Well, I'm quite small, you see, so people think I remind them of a fairy. So I'm like, yay, I do exist.
Here we are. We have a fairy in us. I really love that. That's like, again, you are inspiring and very motivational. With your journey switching from jazz and then moving to a different type of music and then saying, oh, I'm not going to do that again. I'll switch to voiceover now. I hear a lot of artists or business owners or creatives not wanting to move away from what they were doing from when they were young because because what would people say? I was doing jazz for a long time and now I don't want it. Like what happened? And somehow there's a negative notion around that. How did you shift quickly? And like, how was the process of that?
I don't think it was a slow process because I was feeling jazz is quite a niche area and it's hard. It's hard because it's a male dominated area. So being a female, especially a singer, it can take a lot out of you because you're just seen as this singer, just stand on the side and look pretty and then, you know, just do a few notes while the real instrumentalists or the real musicians are doing their thing. And it takes its toll. So I think it kind of, the shift was happening for a long time. And the atmosphere is not a healthy one. Being around jazz musicians is not healthy. And it was making me depressed a lot of the time. So I would go through my depression, then I'd get out of it and then I'd go back into it. And then I think I reached a stage going, you know what, I'm not doing this because it was just so bad. My emotions just so up and down. And, you know, it was affecting my family. It was affecting my friends. And I didn't want that. I didn't want to be like that. So I just thought, you know, I just need to step away. I just did the whole industry just need to move away from it and just do something different with using my voice. And I still sing because they require me to sing in some voiceovers. So I'm still using my talent. I'm not using it. It's just using it in a different way than I was.
Yeah. No, I love that. So let's talk about the current business that you have right now with being a voice artist. How did you start with that? And how do you get clients? And what's the whole business about? This is really something new to me.
Yeah. So, you know what? It's never been something that has occurred to me that I can do. So I used to do interviews a lot, obviously to do with my music, and they always wanted me to record links for them, for the radio stations, or when I was with the label, they wanted me to record, I think they were doing some presentation, and he wanted me to record a voiceover for it. And again, I didn't think of anything. They kept, people said, "Oh, you got such a lovely voice, and you got a phone voice." And then I think when I think maybe my head was out of that music zone. I think when you're focused on something, nothing else matters. You can't see it. You're very kind of narrow. Your mind is just on that particular thing. But then when I was not doing it anymore, I was looking around me and I thought, all right, okay. Started looking at different things that I could do with my voice. And then my sister mentioned, so she was talking to a creative friend of hers and they use voiceover artists. And then she goes, "Amy, you can do it from home. It's something you can set up and, you know, you've got all that experience." I was like, no, that's true. So I did. I just set up I've got a microphone, set up a little quiet place in my house, got all the equipment, made a voice reel, started sending it out. It wasn't so easy because, again, like singing, it's a very saturated market. Everyone has the same idea as me. Everyone can do it. So what I found is that I joined a pay to audition site, which was based in Canada. A lot of people don't like that because they think they're taking your money and you're not getting enough work through it. But I found it really good because I didn't have much voice experience, as in speaking wise, in this way. So joining that network, I was doing like about 20 auditions a day. Mm. And I actually did get paid work. And agencies wouldn't take you unless you had 1 year's paid work. So it's kind of like one of those things, isn't it? The chicken or the egg, which comes first? So I needed that experience to get me onto the radar of people. And then I was doing a lot of networking then because of the pandemic, people were doing online networking. I joined a networking group. I was just pushing myself and then things just started to progress. And I was becoming more confident because I was getting work. And I think that's how it kind of gone. The confidence is built over time.
I love that. What is the paid audition organization that you mentioned that you started with?
Well, this one is called voices.com and they're based in Canada. And so basically you pay an upfront fee and then you just put down your details and what you want to do. And they put auditions into your folder and then you audition and then the client choose. I mean, it's not easy. It's not an easy process because I have to constantly keep auditioning. But as I said, for me, it was good because I have improved so much, over the year and different styles. It's not as simple as people think. So it's not just reading something. It's listening to what they want, taking that on board, and then acting. It's like acting. You've got to put on your voice the way they want it to and bring it to life in a way that's going to relate to their target audience. So you can't. So where is the music? It was me. It was my voice. People were commenting, on me personally. But with this, I have just stepped aside. So it has actually nothing to do with me. It is to do with them, what they want, their needs come first. And I actually love that because it's not personal. So I can take criticism where as far as this is concerned, like when my music, I was finding criticism really hard because it was personal, but this, I actually don't mind. So they tell me, no, I want you to do it this way. It's like, all right, okay, that's fine. I just do it. I don't take it personally. Yeah. And I think that's the main difference with this and singing.
Oh, I love that. How long did you, from the moment that you started, were you doing like auditioning and like trying to find your way before you actually get sustainable, pay from this?
Yeah, I joined in November and I got my first paid job in March. So it was a little while, but you have to be like with anything, you have to be persistent and focused.
Right.
And see what you want and you'll get it. I think that's how you have to be. And that's like with anything. I mean, I think with singing, I took it for granted because I was doing it from a young age. And so people would always ask me, since I was really young, but this is the first time that I've stepped and done something new from scratch where I had no experience. So it took a bit of time to get myself into that zone where people didn't actually know who I was in this area. And then it's just as I said, it's staying focused and not being disheartened because it does take like a lot of perseverance.
Yes, like anything else. No, I love that. Yes. So how do you price your projects? How are voice artists are being paid? I know I have some listeners that I personally know that might be interested in this area. So if you don't mind sharing, how is the pricing structured for voice artists? Is it per project? Is there like a certain length? And how much is the potential earning on an average?
Gosh, you know what? That is a question. You can earn anything from about, so in dollars, say, so from, say, $75 to thousands, depending on what your project is and how well known you are, how sought after your voice is. So say for a telephone, so I've done a lot of voicemail for companies. So I've charged from $100 to about $350. But it also depends if it's broadcast or non-broadcast. So non-broadcast are just like normal videos that you'd find, but broadcast, say for TV, and then the price goes up. Like it can be 1,000, 2,000, and then you can 3,000, 4,000 as a buyout all in one payment, or they can then keep giving you every time they use it or every year. Or you can charge per project, which is what I do. Or you can also charge per hour, which is what I've noticed what a lot of voiceover artists do. I don't charge per hour because I'm a bit of a perfectionist and I like to do things at my own time. So I don't think it's fair to do that. So that's why I charge per project. But some people are just really, really good at just doing things really, really quickly. So they charge per hour. So the pricing can be anything, you know what? And I was researching it myself. And they said there is no correct answer to that. It's whatever you feel that you want to charge. That basically is the rate, whatever you want to charge. And yeah. If people will pay you, they will pay you.
Yeah. No, I love that. Amazing. Thank you for sharing. That is a very extensive and straightforward answer. That's really going to be helpful for listeners who wants to be a voice artist. Mm. I do have a podcast management business on the side as I do this. And I've dabbled a little bit, not deeply. It's just a thought that came to my head, like, ooh, yeah, that seems like fun. Because I love reading to my kids, like, and making voices. And they love it too. I mean, my kids are always my audiences. But I said, what if I read kids' books, like in Audible and stuff like that? So amazing.
You could do that. I mean, if you go to, I think it is Amazon, and then there's a link through it. And I can't remember what it's called, but it is for Audible book. And then you pitch to authors and then they choose you or not. But you can decide to take a percentage or you can decide to take a one-off payment. But it is quite, I know a lot of people who actually do that. So you could do that. There's a lot of ways to do that.
Amazing. I love that. So would you say that being a voice artist is something that you currently, you're doing full time? This is your bread and butter right now.
It is. Yeah, it is. And as I said, it's kind of varied. So it kind of involves the singing as well. I think I did one a couple of weeks ago and it was for a student and they wanted a jingle for their podcast. So they'd come up with words, they'd written the lyrics and they had backing tracks. So they wanted me to come up with a melody that fit into it. So that was a lot of fun because I'd forgotten how much I love to make up melodies. So that was really cool. So that people can say, I can say to people, I haven't stopped singing. I'm still doing it, but just in a different way than I used to.
Oh, amazing. I love that. Okay. So I am going to dive in into what do you think people should be on, like women, people should be unapologetic about from your perspective. I know I saw somewhere because I was reviewing your guesting and your media and everything where you say you have power in your voice and obviously that's what you believe in, but I want to hear it from you. Like what, if there's anything that you would tell someone, be unapologetic about it, what is it for Amy's perspective?
I think it's being who you are. So being unapologetic for being maybe mad or crazy or having like insane thoughts and ideas, but being, and I think this is for a lot of creative people especially. So as I was growing up, I was kind of not who I was. So I was hiding who I was because I had to go through so much. There's a lot of walls that I built up and a lot of things that I made up about myself that wasn't true, that I made myself believe was true. But did harm me in the long run because I wasn't able to actually be my full self. And I used to think I was this unique, like, well, everyone's unique, don't get me wrong, but I used to think that I was just the only one who I was like me. And I was thinking nobody else is like me. And, you know, it would take me ages to find people who I could relate to. And that was just completely wrong. It was like, I just had to make, I made that up. And nobody told me that. Nobody said, Amy, you're just weird, or, you know, nobody likes you or things like that. I just made myself believe it. So the things I did were around that. So I think I was probably come across as kind of maybe trying a bit too hard with people and making them like me, and not thinking that maybe things that I would always worry about saying certain things. And when I meet new people, I babble, and then afterwards I'd always be worried about that and how I came across. And it was only a year ago, I think I decided that something I couldn't, you know, something had to be done, because I didn't want to go like that. So I got a life coach, and kind of, it was only about 6 sessions, but it kind of made me realize that I'm not that insane. I'm not that crazy. My ideas are just really not that out there. I mean, there are more people that are more out there than I am. But it took that to actually make me feel comfortable about myself. And I think leaving the the music scene behind was a good thing, because then I kind of met up with people who were encouraging me to be myself, who didn't want to hide it. And so all the business, you know, in a business sense, like you have to stand out. So you have to show who your personality really is. Mm-hmm. And through that, I think I realized that it's okay to be who I am. And I don't actually like ponder or worry about how I came across with people or in interviews and things like that. It just is what it is. If you don't like me, you don't like me.
Right.
And I think it's unapologetic about that. Just being who you are, and just owning up to who you are, and just accepting it. And I think that is the main thing that I've learned throughout my whole life.
I love that. Amazing. I want to pick out on what you said about the beliefs that you created for yourself. And as a coach, what I say is, yes, those thoughts like are within your head, and as I hear you say, you're claiming that those are your limiting beliefs. And sometimes some of these things are made by societal pressure and just like our environment and like the shoulds, and really, if I can use the word, the colonization of our system. We creatives and minorities make, and this is not something that we commonly tell each other, like casually, hey, Amy, I'm feeling this way. Are you feeling this way? No,
yeah.
Like we don't say it out loud. And so that's why we feel alone and out in the corner in the dark by ourselves, because in the outside people look happy, like everybody knows what they're supposed to do in their life. Like in the outside, people has their own, you know, they're in their place, they go to school, they have a job, and they have all of these things. But when you're gifted or when you're a minority, you would tend to feel like you don't fit in a box, that you don't belong anywhere. And yeah. So I'm saying, yes, it could be a belief that you're building in your head. And the good news is, if that's a belief that you're doing for yourself, you have full power to change that story and create the new storyline in your mind. And you don't have to blame yourself for anything, for any of that, because also the entire world is built for us to not reach out to one another. And community and reaching out is extremely powerful, I believe, for the BIPOC community, right. Most importantly. Right. So for my listeners who are creatives, who are feeling depressive, because I know creatives typically would have this creative cycle, and of course, what goes up must come down. They would go on a depressive mode. And if you feel lonely right now, and if you feel like no one's understanding you, and like you're the only type of species that you are, and no one can relate to you, or there's no one to relate to, don't feel that way, and reach out and find your community. You will find your community if, just like what Amy said, if you find out who you are and live your life authentically without masks on. I mean, how can you find your people if you're pretending to be somebody else?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? And that's why we tend to find the wrong people. And then we wake up later and thinking, gosh, why is my world not as I want it to be? And then we don't actually come back to focus. Well, actually, who do we have around us as friends? And that's so important, because they can build you up or they can bring you down. Mm. And I think that is maybe that the first place to look if you think things are not going right. No, you are right. And reaching out and actually being honest about your feelings. And if people can't handle that, it's okay. Let them go. And that's the one thing I used to find I used to find detaching from people very difficult. Mm. So I used to think that they're in my life for a reason. They have to always be in my life, everyone that I have. So I used to cling on to every single person until I was like, oh my God, but they're not like, they're not helping. They don't want to be in my life. So then I was like, well, why am I keeping them? Well, yeah. Forcing them almost to stay and treat me really badly. So that's a lot. I think that's a lot of things that people do.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yes. I am guilty of this. And I am slowly being intentional in every single aspect of my life as much as I could. And I am curating my online experience. I am trying to be not on Facebook, but it's so hard not to be on Facebook with a lot of things connected to Facebook and networking. For example, I met you in Facebook. Had I not been in Facebook, we wouldn't be able to have this conversation.
Right.
So what I'm doing is I'm mindfully curating my experience in Facebook. And so I was looking at my friends' lists. And I want to say 80% of the people in my list are people that I met just one time. And because I don't want to offend them, or like I just want to keep them in my circles, and I want it to look like I got like 3 million friends, I keep them. But then my feed is not my feed. My feed is not people that I want to support and pay attention to. I know it, like in hindsight, if you don't want to see things that other people post, or you don't want to see things that you don't care about, you just scroll up. But then that's 1 second of you, you know, a chance of you seeing a post of somebody that you care about that you might, you know, you missed. Also playing with the algorithm of the social media. Because if you have 2,000 friends, how can you see everything in one go? So I'm kind of doing that too, like actively unfriending people. And it's not to hurt them or anything like that. I'm doing it for myself. And I want to be more intentional around that. And this is something that I'm applying in my life as well. Because I resonate so deeply in what you're saying, that you would have this conversation with someone. And I'm kind of feeling weird in that way too. And then after that conversation, I'm going to have like 48 hours of replay. Did I say that right? Was I weird? Was I too clean? Was that too personal? And when we become friends, I'd always check in with myself. Am I too clingy? Am I too like cold? Is this like enough type of friendship? It's so weird. And for my listeners who are resonating with what I'm saying right now, this could be a trauma response from our childhood. And it doesn't need to be. It doesn't mean that it is, but this could be. So it's for you to know and to discern, wait, is this a trauma response? Because in my childhood, I was left and abandoned. Is this an attachment or abandonment issue? Do I need help to work with a therapist or a coach to work this out? Or is it just me? And it's not for anyone to say but yourself. But I love that you're bringing this up. And how true that no matter what type of business you're putting up, I'm putting up podcast business, I'm putting up coaching business, and all types of businesses, and you're doing a voice artist business, and yet the same kind of mindset issues are present.
It is. But also, I mean, going back to what you said, I also found that because I was going through so much, and I wanted to deflect from my own issues, so then I was kind of, I've never been a gossip person. I don't like talking about other people, but I kind of got myself into that and focusing more on other people. And then there was a time when I'm thinking, well, you know what? I don't really care. So I actually don't pay attention to celebrities when everybody's like reading I don't read magazines because they don't interest me. And people actually find that odd that I don't have that kind of interest because like I think that everyone's the same. We're all born, we bleed, and then we die. So until that actually changes, everyone, it doesn't matter who is popular, how many people know you, they're the same, isn't it? So it doesn't interest me. So I think, but a lot of people deflect from their own issues by concentrating on other people, bringing other people down, you know, slagging people off in the media. And I'm just like, what, you know, why are you doing that? What is not going on in your own life that you feel that you have to do that with famous people or people that we see in the media? And I think this is a big thing. That's why we like reality shows. I mean, I'm the same. You get hooked in, isn't it? You get hooked into somebody else's life because yours is probably not going the right way that you want it to. But I think that's fine if you do it in balance. But I think a lot of people, well, I did when I was younger, I tended to overdo that and just and gossip fuss about other people and focus on other people too much, when really it's just mind your own business and get on with your own life and don't let that affect you. So I think that a lot of people maybe want to look at that. just a little bit of, not like it's not a criticism. It's just like, just, well, maybe just look why. I think judgment, I always say that I've learned not to be a judgmental person, but it's come over time. So I used to be really judgmental of other people. And then again, I had to assess why I was doing that. And it was because I was judgmental of myself. So, but then when you kind of leave that, people can say anything, and you know, it doesn't bother me, because I'm not going to like, if they're having an affair, doesn't, you know, I'm not, none of my business. Okay, well, let's look at it from all sides. It's not, you know, oh my God, that's absolutely wrong. You shouldn't be doing that. And a lot of people have that. So when you have conversations with people, I kind of like, just don't say anything, because I know that they're not gonna, you know, they're not in that place. So I think that it comes from a lot of things as well.
No, I love that. And that's a good advice to tell someone who's still in that rut. And this is also common in the business world, in the online business world, for you to know who your gifts are. You know who you are. You're solid with your values. You're solid with your services. You know that you can help people. But then you're going in your track, and you're like looking at your same business owners. You're looking at other voice artists. Oh, she's doing so much better than I am. Oh, wait, this other person, she has a better website. What? She was a guest on this specific podcast that I want to be a guest on. Like, what's wrong with me? But then when you look at your own plate, when you look at in your own track, you are on track on your own lane, to, in your own speed, in your own pace, going to where you want to go. But then because you get distracted and look at the people around you, you'd feel like you would compare yourself. But what Amy just said is that if you know who you are solidly, and you're confident within your own, even the bad ones, even the traumas, if you recognize, oh, actually, this is a trauma response. So I'm being insecure right now because I have a trauma response around this and I'm working on it. It doesn't have to do with this person. Like, it doesn't have, that statement doesn't matter to me. That statement, like, if something triggers you, it's not like you would react to that statement and let it affect you, because you would come from a curious place like, oh, that statement triggered me. Why? What is it in my past, or was it in me that triggered that statement? Like, let me be curious about that, instead of, you're wrong, I'm going to prove you wrong. Like, and you're going to do all of these things, this, and then it's just going to blow up and then lead to you wasting a lot of time and energy. And then in the end, it doesn't really matter. Because that is not like your thing. So yeah, I love that.
I think that's the power of the voice that I keep saying. It's like, if you express yourself in the right way, then there'll be no misunderstandings. You won't take criticism, you know, hard. You'll be able to accept it and actually say, okay, yes, I'm doing this wrong, or this could be improved, and take it in that way. Whereas a lot of people don't know how to articulate what they want to say. And their tone probably comes across as like really harsh. Mm. I've had like blunt people talking to me and I'm like, oh my gosh. But then when you talk to them, you understand that's how they speak. So they're not actually being that way at all. They're not being mean. So, and I think learning how to express ourselves is key in when interacting in business or in social, and just every way, every aspect of our lives, even with kids. You know, you'd have to talk in a different way to them than maybe you would to an adult. But it's just learning those nuances that, you know.
So I want to hear about the power of the voice. Do you have to speak a certain way, or do you have to have a certain accent in your perspective? Or is there a specific technique that you want to share with us to express the power in your voice? I feel that personally I use too much words to get my question or like my statement across. Yeah. So that's my question.
Well, you know, I do that too. I mean, my language is because I've got a lot of kids around me. All my friends have got kids. I've got two nephews. So the way I speak is very in basic words. But I think a lot of people try to sound intelligent. So when they're speaking, they want to use the best words possible. And then you're like, okay, I have no understanding. So I've got Google at hand. Okay, well, Google that word. What does that mean? So I think probably the best way is to speak in basic terms, where like talk to someone as if they were a child, like they don't understand. You have to explain it to them, and it's not being patronizing. Don't come across as you know better than them. I think that's a lot of what people do. I think that's one key thing, but I don't think you even need, accents are so big right now. People want different accents for a lot of things. They want to be more international. The British accent is big in America because they want to, you know, they like that kind of an accent. But I've done auditions where they're looking for transatlantic accents. And first of all, I was like, what on earth is that? And then, but actually it's like the Hollywood old fashioned transatlantic is kind of like a mix of proper British. And you've got that slight American tinge to it. So I don't think there isn't any one way of speaking. And I think people should probably just be themselves and speak how they will speak, because you can't pretend to be somebody else. You can only be yourself. And then if you do try and you're trying to be something that you're not, you're going to find a lot of pressure and you're going to be stressed out a lot. So I think the whole point of the power of using your own voice is just being who you are. I mean, being authentic. And that's a big word everyone seems to be using this past year, as being authentic and just letting your personality shine. And then that will come across. It's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing, you know, when people just their, you know, just themselves, how people, they attract the right types of people, because as I'm probably speaking too much now, but if you try and put on, like I've met a lot of people who it was one way 1 minute, and then they're with a different group of people, and then they're just completely somebody else. And I was like, gosh, I was quite jealous, because what you see is what you get. I'm like this, like with my parents, with kids, or with the Pope, or with the like priests. Oh, I've never met the Pope, I'd say, but with like priests and ministers. So that is the way that is the way I am. But a lot of people can fluctuate. I was like, gosh, that's amazing. But then I was thinking, that's actually a lot of hard work to be able to do that, to read, you know, to be different people in different situations. That I feel blessed now that I'm not like that. So it's probably just to be one way. You don't have to worry then, but saying the wrong thing.
Okay, it's funny that you're bringing this up, because I feel, not in a negative way, not in a way that I am pretending to be somebody else, but I feel that because I'm multilingual, I feel that I have to switch personality when I need to speak in a certain language. This is my American personality that you're talking to right now, for me to be able to deliver the language, the accent, the culture of this language, and for you to understand me in this way. And this is also how I was trained by Americans to talk like Americans. And when I speak in my native tongue, it's totally different. Me in a totally different personality, totally different way to use my words. And I also have an English way to talk in my native accent. like we would be, my kids are their native tongue, I will say, is English. They don't speak my language. They don't speak Tagalog at all. My native language is called Tagalog in the Philippines.
Okay.
Because they grew up talking in English, and that's my fault. I did not teach them, or I homeschooled them. But I don't talk to them in this accent. I talk to them in our English, in our own kind of language. And I'm learning French right now, and I have to have a different voice too. Like I have a French voice. I have to have a different way to carry myself and the body movement. And I need to like think in French. So therefore, I need to think like the French, the way that they process things. For me to be able to, for the words to come together in my head easily. And so that's what happens when I talk to the Americans, I talk this way, or the English speaking people. And then when I talk to the French, I talk in a different way. And my body would just like switch to this whole type of person. But I don't think that I'm changing per se. Like, I'm like, you know, my beliefs are the same. I'm still authentic as I am. The delivery is just the same. And you're right in saying that it is exhausting for some, especially me, that English is not my first language, but I speak English 24/7. It is exhausting. It can be exhausting. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. But no, I think you are right. And I do children's accents as well. And I was trying to do it on video, and people go, Amy, you could see the process that you were going through just in that like 10 seconds. To change into doing that voice. So I can understand language. I mean, when I speak Hindi, I can't really speak it very well, but when I do it, I kind of go into that kind of, in that mode. So maybe that's a little bit of a different thing than rather changing personalities in different in different situations. Right. I think that's probably speaking languages. You just want to embody the, you know, what you know of who that kind of language. So I think probably that's a little bit different.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, where other people like talk to this type of this group of people and then turn their back and then talk to a different group of people and be a different person and probably change their what they stand for and their belief.
That's exactly. So you don't know. It's like those people that will kind of talk badly about people behind their back and then be nice in front and then do it. But you know, say that say if you have a beautician or a hairdresser and they're talking badly of their customer, so you know that type of person that would do that, because then you're scared then, oh, are they going to talk badly about me when you're with that person? So I think it's probably best just to, if you're going to say something, I always say, if I'm going to say something, I'll say it to your face. If I'm going to say something behind your back, I will say it to you as well. So I think then you know where you are. With those kind of people. That's why I love blunt people, I have to be honest, because you just know where you are.
Yeah.
No mirror, no smoke screen or anything.
Yeah. No, I love that. Okay. My last question would be, you've mentioned the power of your voice. And so for example, for me, I know we're in a global space. And for me, for example, and a lot of people that I know, even the French speaking, you know, people, I have a friend, she's French. And she's entering this global space who speaks English. And so she has a French accent. Mm. How then would you tell us, to people like us who are not first, you know, English is not our first language, how then can we gain confidence in using the power of our voice? Because that alone, in our head, I'm thinking, am I going to say that this word's right? Is this going to come out right? Then how can I even think about, like, saying what I want to say, like having to take, you know, step into my power and say, this is my authentic self and this is my magic and this is what I want to do in the world. How can I even talk about that if I have a barrier in using the language?
Yeah, I think first of all, I think you have to relax and acknowledge that this now has become especially with the internet over COVID, it has become a multinational place. So people are used to dealing with people who don't speak English as their first language, and they're not gonna judge you harshly for, you know, not being able to maybe speak in the way that you want to, because, you know, English is not your first language. So obviously, and there's a lot of people who are not multilingual and who can't speak many languages. So first of all, I think that they'd probably be very impressed with you that you can speak many different languages. So that's the one thing, I think, and give yourself a break, that, you know, English is the multicultural language for everyone. Everyone wants to speak English. But then I think I'm really impressed with people who can speak many different languages. I mean, I can't. So that one thing that would really impress me. So I think you're on a level, a step above anyway, the fact that you can speak many different languages. And I think it's just saying that, oh, I'm sorry, you know, just being, you know, honesty. Just saying, look, I'm sorry, this is not my first language. This is what I'm trying to say. It's probably not coming across very well. I think that's all you can do. And then saying what you know and being articulate as you can. And then maybe just practicing. So if there's a word that you want to do, Google or ask. Ask if you're in front of people, go, oh, I'm sorry, how do you say this? What's the best way? So I think honesty is the best way. And you'll be respected for it, I think.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, I will let you go, but I want to ask you for all of the links, all of Amy's links. She sent it to me prior to our recording, will be in the show notes below. But what are you offering right now? How can people work with you and how they can find you?
Well, I've got a website at www.amysinha.com, and it's SINHA. But I'm on all the social media sites. So if you just Google my name, it all comes up. So I'm on Instagram, Amy Sinha Voice. I'm even on Clubhouse, Amy Sinha, Twitter, Amy Sinha Voice, Facebook, Amy Sinha, British voiceover artist. I think that's everything. But you just Google or YouTube. I've got a few different accounts on YouTube. So I've got a singing, original singing account. I've got covers singing, and I've got my presenting and voiceover on YouTube. But again, if you just Google my name, I'm kind of lucky. My name isn't actually so popular that you can actually find me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I love that. Yeah, I did a quick Google and found you quickly.
Okay.
So what are the programs that you have right now, or how can people work with you?
So if you've just gone to my website, there's my phone number, or there's all of my links that you can get, contact my email address. So if you just give me a message or give me a call, I'll be happy, or we can schedule a Zoom meeting, whatever, that, no pressure, for like 5-10 minutes just to say hi. I love meeting new people. So, you know, find me on social media, say hi, or just send me an email. That would be amazing. And I'd be happy to answer all your questions if you have any questions.
Cool. Amazing. Thank you so much. Oh my goodness. I hope that you enjoyed that episode as much as I did, and that you learned so much from it as much as we did from that conversation. And my takeaway from it is that there are things in life, such as when Amy found jazz in her childhood and her teens, that she loved so much. But then as she's growing into adulthood, she have decided and discerned that that's no longer where she wants to be, and that's no longer who she is. And she made that brave choice to get out of that field that she once loved and has been her life for a time. And she took the courage and the power to get out of that situation and move on to something new. And if anything, what I love most about Amy's story is that it empowers us creatives to be able to say that it's okay to shift, and that this is right now what we have in life, and this is what we love. And maybe 10 years, 20 years from now, it's going to be different, and it's okay. And I love that Amy is a testament that in the process and in the journey of finding who you are and finding your voice and taking power back in your voice, that the music, being an artist, being a coach, or whatever it is just a medium to finding who you truly are, and that you could still use your unapologetic self in the end, no matter what the medium it would be. So I'm going to leave you with that. You can find all of the links in the show notes below. And I have an opening in my one-on-one coaching practice to work with me and talk about your limiting beliefs, or talk about what's holding you back from moving forward with that project that you've been wanting to launch for so long, or just like Amy benefited from working with a life coach. Talk about how you can get on track and stay on track and stay accountable to your dreams and to yourself. I would love to bring you on board and for you to take a spot in my one-on-one coaching practice. Reach out to me at coachunapologetic.com, and you can also find me in Instagram at coachunapologetic. I'll see you around. Au revoir.